I'd like to welcome George Dilla back to Michigan Writers on the Air. Today, George will be talking about his second collection of short stories, Working Stiffs. Welcome, George.
Thank you, Aaron, for inviting me.
Now, George, this is really interesting. Last time you were here, and your collection was titled Nothing More to Say, but now we have a new collection, so obviously there was.
Nothing More to Tell.
Nothing More to Tell.
Right.
Now there's more to tell.
Now, there is more to tell. And what did I know? You know, I thought at the time I was done. You know, I'd told it all.
I think you're just getting started.
Probably, yeah.
George spent most of his working life as an advertising writer around Detroit, mostly, I think, right?
Detroit and Denver, a little bit in New York City.
And his work is edgy, provocative, and often very humorous.
That's what they tell me, although I fail to see the humor in it myself. Somebody will say, I love that. It was really funny. And I'll say, really? It was funny?
I didn't and then mean he it laughs. To be. It's all serious. So your new book, Working Stiffs, there are three stories, two contemporary, one that's set in biblical times. Can you tell us about this collection and what you were working toward? And
well, the stories were actually written over a long period of time. You know, maybe 12 years separated them all. And my first collection, which was Nothing More to Tell, has 9 stories in it. I write very, very slowly, and I thought, boy, it's going to be many, many years until I have 9 stories again. So I wonder if I could find a publisher who would agree to publish a chapbook. It's hard to find publishers who will publish fiction chapbooks. A lot of them publish poetry chapbooks. Fiction chapbooks, which is, you know, like 3 stories maybe, are harder to find. I was fortunate to find One Wet Shoe, which is the publisher that did this. They love the stories. The nice thing about it is that they're all kind of on one theme, which mm-hmm. is working stiffs. It's not the name of one of the stories, but it kind of ties them all together. And so, you know, they agreed to publish it, and it came out this past spring. They're all stories about working stiffs, like you and me, Aaron, or like we used to be, at least. Now we have the luxury of being writers, and we can just take it easy most of the time.
Why am I working all the time?
I don't know.
So the first story in the collection talks about an office with a manager who has a rather dictatorial approach?
I would say that he manages by fear. He admits to being a manager by fear. Seems to work for him.
The CEO is known as Mr. Big.
Mr. Big, who, yeah. You know, who we only meet in one occasion. You know, I talk to people who have read the story and they tell me, you know, I worked at really nice places. All of my bosses were really nice. And I said, well, good for you. You know, what can I tell you? Not everybody has that experience.
You had a very limited life experience.
Yeah. I had a boss once in the advertising business. His room, his office, for no apparent reason, was 10 degrees colder than any other room in the building. It wasn't because his air conditioning was better. It was just him. Mm-hmm. He brought the temperature down. And we used to play a game that I actually talk about in the story. With our fellow employees, you know, we used to stick our head in their office and say, "So, Mr. So-and-so wants to see you," and then watch them cringe, you know, and then say, "Just kidding, no problem," you know. So yeah, there are places like that, and I must admit though that I really loved my job. It was a great company. Just was a heck of a place to earn your living, you know.
Mm-hmm. So the second story, it's a different kind of working stiff.
Yeah. This is a soldier. And they have their bosses, too.
Mm-hmm.
This soldier happens to be in Joshua's army, and they are getting ready to sack Jericho. But some people may recognize the story, if they've studied their Old Testament properly. And I don't know why I was inspired to do that. I think it's the main character, we call him a shaft man because that's what he does. He carries a big spear. His name is Samuel. He is a part of a squad of shaft men in Joshua's army. And basically the story tells about their training, their mission to kill as many Canaanites as they can, and their sack of the village of Jericho. And so, and many other cities.
You have a whole list of... Right.
They went on after Jericho and took care of many other cities. And the mission they were given was pretty clear. Kill everybody, all the animals, all the people, burn the possessions, burn the city to the ground, nothing left of it, nothing left of the people. So how does, you know, in the first story, the man who works for the company has to deal with some moral issues. I would say that Samuel, as a member of Joshua's army, had to deal with some moral issues as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's just a working guy.
Just a working guy, just trying to, you know, make his shekels or whatever they got paid back then.
Would you like to read from that story?
Sure, sure. I'm going to read a short piece. Now that you know what the story is about, they marched around Jericho for 40 days and 40 nights without, and the walls did not fall down. So they got in a different way, actually. Mm-hmm. They had a spy. This is true. The spy who, from the inside, who opened the gates for them, and the army stormed in. And this is from Shaftman. Our army had scattered into every sector of the city. There are fires everywhere, shouts of victory and screams of death and the smell of blood and fear. Every street, every building, every house must be entered, destroyed, every person killed, every possession burned. Yahweh has commanded it. Our squad pounds down a narrow street, following our leader. There are small houses close on both sides, but no Canaanites, not a soul. And our leader yells, "Inside, inside," and Dove and I rush through the open door, looking for the enemy. There is no one in the first room. Dove and I stop, breathing hard. We listen. Then he makes a gesture with his head, telling me to go through one door, he will go through the other. I nod in agreement. I lift my shaft to ready position. As I advance toward the door, I slowly turn the weapon in my hands until I can see my name, Samuel, etched by fire. I enter the small room, look, then turn and come back out, my shaft clean. Dove is coming out of his room. "No one," he says. We return to the smoky street. My eyes smart, my throat is tight, my mouth gritty. I can see as if the image is real. The four people huddled in the corner of the room I had entered. Their faces turned toward me in terror, their eyes wide. The old man, toothless, his skin as brown and withered as an olive leaf on the winter ground. The mother, her lips moving quickly in silent speech, holding a shaking boy against her, her hand clamped across his mouth. The girl, soft as a ripe fruit, reaching forward, offering her in her sweet palm a ring of hammered gold. I will never forget them, the Canaanite dogs.
Wow.
But he did leave them.
That's George Dilla reading from Shaftman. The last story in the book is really
90 million.
90 million. 90 million bucks.
90 million bucks. Martin Harpoonian spent his whole life building this company, Harpo Molds and Plastics. He was an old-fashioned guy, worked from the ground up, built a multi-million-dollar company with plants all over America, had people who had been with him for years, his faithful employees. He is now retirement age, past retirement age. He has an offer to sell the company to a big conglomerate for $90 million. He takes it.
Well, they give him some earnest money.
Well,
small check for $10 million to show they're serious.
Right. And they are gathered around the conference table in the bank building where all the papers are being signed. And he signs the paper and accepts the check and immediately has seller's remorse. According to his lawyer, Meyer Kottman, the quickest seller's remorse he has ever witnessed. He tells them, "Take back your money. I've changed my mind." They said, "No, no.
Too late."
Too late.
And, so, oh, by the way, please be out of your office.
Please be out of your office by the weekend, right. Which he refuses to do. He refuses to leave his office. He camps in there. He's actually not the protagonist of the story. The protagonist of the story is a man who works for him. His loyalty is split between Martin Harpoonian, who has been his boss for many years, who he's loyal to, and the new regime, which is his future.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a very nice tension.
It is, yeah. Yeah,
beautifully done.
And it doesn't work out well for everyone, but he, well, I'm not going to give it away, except that, you know, that's the dilemma that he has to deal with. And whether to help the new regime oust his old boss, literally oust him from his office,
yeah,
where he is camped, or not.
You really capture an interesting sadness there of someone who has built something his whole life and then all at once has to walk away from it. And how do you do that? And I don't think it's easy.
How do you do it? I don't think it's easy either. I think Martin was probably pushed into it by, who knows, his family, his wife.
Yeah.
Honey, $90 million. Come on. You know, we could really have a good time. Nice place in Florida. And so he does it. His son, who is kind of a ne'er-do-well, but wants his share of the money as well, is pushing his dad. Come on, Dad. You know, give him the office. Accept the money. You'll have a great life. He doesn't want to do it. He's not only leaving his company, but he's leaving all of these people that mm-hmm. he has worked with for all these years, people who have been with him, who have been faithful to him. He doesn't know what's going to happen to them when he leaves. Will they still have their jobs? What will the new company do? So it's really a dilemma.
This book comes from a small press. You are sort of back at your old business. You have to promote and sell. It's a perfect thing for a former ad man, but it's an important lesson for writers. So many writers don't know what to do with the promotional part of
right.
of their books. And they, you know, please buy my book and send me a check, but don't ask me to go out into right. the big world. But you do it with such skill.
Well, yes, and you're right. I had 40 years experience doing it. Plus, I love to do it. I mean, I love to talk about writing. I love to be with other writers. I love to give readings. I know not all writers love to give readings, but I love to do that kind of thing. And it's, you know, it's required these days, not only with a small publisher like One Wet Shoe, but for some major publishers as well. The big ones might give you a couple thousand bucks to promote your book, which will get you maybe around Michigan a little bit, but it's not going to get you on the network TV shows. It's not going to get you, you know, reading all over the country. You're going to just have to do that yourself, whether you're from a big publisher or a small one these days.
Along the way, you've been a cheerleader for writers with the Ludington Visiting Writers. Could you talk about those activities for a few minutes?
Sure. When my wife and I moved to Ludington 14 years ago, it's been, we were living in the Detroit area at the time, which is my native home. We decided to try to do something in Ludington that would add to the cultural mix of the city. And I knew a lot of writers, and I thought, well, we could start a writing series here. So that was the beginning of it. We've been going now for 12 years. Just in the past 6 months or so, I've backed away from it. I'm turning it over to the next generation. They're going to do a great job. I figured I had done it long enough. But you are a guest. You have been a guest in Ludington as a faculty member at one of our conferences, a Mystery Writers Conference. So you're pretty familiar with what we do down there. We have not only bring in writers to read from all over the state, but we have activities for local writers as well. We have writing groups. We've published a couple of poetry chapbooks of our own writers mm-hmm. there. And so it'll keep going. It's our little, we've put Ludington kind of on the literary map in Michigan.
You certainly have. Now, I've just checked on your website. GeorgeDilla.com works.
Aha, good. It should.
So you have that. Our listeners can find you at that website. Right. You also have a blog.
Well, on that website, there is a blog, yes. But I don't write on it. I
just put pictures.
I just put pictures. And if you want to see a lot of pictures of...
George Dilla giving readings.
Giving readings. And even the last time I was here, I think a picture of the two of us is probably on that blog.
Somewhere.
Somewhere. And even on vacation, of all places, you know. Yeah, I thought maybe I would write a blog. And then I thought, you know, I'm writing so many other different things. I write a weekly column for the Ludington Daily News, which is 600 words every Monday. And that's a responsibility as yes. well. So I figured I just pictures I'll do. You know.
So what's next?
Oh, boy. I'm trying to learn Spanish. Does that count? Not that I would ever write in Spanish. But I'm continuing to work on stories. I started a novel a year or so ago, and I showed the first couple of chapters to an actual agent, and they said, you know, I think I'm going to like this. Why don't you send it to me when it's done? So you can't pass up an opportunity like that. I mean, when an agent says, send it to me, mm-hmm. you know. So I'm trying to finish that novel. It's a mystery novel, as a matter of fact. I've never written a mystery novel before. Maybe you can give me some tips. And how many have you written now, Aaron?
Eight.
Eight. Wow, that's amazing. And so it's fun. I continue to write short stories. On my website, there's a page called Short Stuff, which really was kind of a bunch of links to some shorter things that have been published here and there. But now it's a link to longer things as well, so people can go there and see some other things that I've written, personal essays and flash pieces and short fiction that have been published here and there.
Well, this is really an enjoyable collection of short stories, Working Stiffs. George Dilla, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for asking me to come up. It was good seeing you again.